Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, February 11th, 2020. We'll begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Democratic Primary Forum, House Hopefuls Debate Healthcare, Other Issues. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Champaign. The two Democrats hoping to take Republican Congressman Rodney Davis's 13th district seat this fall squared off Monday at the Champaign County Democratic Primary Forum. Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, a professional fundraiser from Springfield, who came within 3,000 votes of defeating Davis in 2018, focused on improving access to health care and repeatedly criticized Davis. She now faces Stephanie Smith of Urbana in the March 17th primary. When I saw Rodney Davis celebrating on the White House lawn that they had passed a bill that would cause millions of people to lose their insurance, I thought to myself, either they don't know or they don't care, Londrigan said, voicing her support for protecting the Affordable Care Act and lowering the cost of prescription drugs by leveraging the power of Medicare as the largest purchaser of prescription drugs in the nation. Healthcare was one of many issues Smith took a more liberal stance on. I lost my mother to cancer because she couldn't afford to go to the doctor. She had headaches for years that she just treated with aspirin over the counter, and within 6 months of being diagnosed, her mother died, Smith said. Anything less than single payer is eugenics. She also said, she supports the Green New Deal, forgiving all student loans and removing troops from the Middle East, often giving one word, yes, answers. In contrast, Londrigan typically avoided a simple answer. On the Green New Deal, she said, there's a lot of really good legislation out there that is very climate forward. Londrigan said she'd like to be on the new Select Committee on Climate Crisis, that looks at every policy through the prism of this climate crisis. She also said she'd look to restore some of the environmental regulations rolled back by the Trump administration. On student loan forgiveness, if you can afford your student loans, then you should pay for your student loans, Londrigan said. I believe that there needs to be student loan forgiveness for people who have gone into public service. That's what they were promised. She also said college affordability needs to be addressed and said she supports Pell Grants, income share agreements, and trying to make community college tuition free. On withdrawing troops from the Middle East, I think to make a blanket statement about abandoning our allies would be a dangerous statement to make, Londrigan said. I think there has to be a thoughtful withdrawal of our troops across the world, across the Middle East, while making sure that we aren't leaving people in a more dangerous circumstance than we found them. The candidates did find agreement in their support of ranked choice voting and abolishing the Electoral College. Yes and yes, Smith said. I like the idea of ranked choice voting, Londrigan said, and I think we've all seen what the Electoral College is up to, so yes. The candidates were also asked whether they'd fully support their primary opponent in the general election if they became the Democratic nominee against Davis. Smith wouldn't commit to that. Why would that be your business? That's not an appropriate question to ask somebody who they vote for. That's private, Smith said. Londrigan said she would, as she actively recruits women to run for office. I would absolutely support my opponent, Londrigan said. Throughout the forum, a handful of audience members interrupted Londrigan, and at one point started chanting, Medicare for All, before leaving the forum held at the Champaign City Government Building. The forum was co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Champaign County, the NAACP of Champaign County, and the News Gazette. Democratic candidates for Champaign County Board District 6, which covers much of North and West Champaign, also took questions. Incumbent Charles Young, a University of Illinois retiree, said he wouldn't necessarily commit to voting with the Democratic caucus to select the Champaign County Board Chairman. To be quite honest, you got some funny acting people within the party, said Young, who said it's important to be nonpartisan once elected. His opponent, Busey Bank manager Deshaun Williams, said he would. The candidates for Champaign County Board District 10, research archaeobotanist Mary King, and appointed incumbent Connie Dillard Myers also faced off. King spoke in favor of a solar farm near St. Joseph. She called it an opportunity for farmers and landowners to harvest energy instead of commodity crops. Dillard Myers said she also supports the project because that's going to help drive the cost of energy down, therefore helping everyone. It's also a good environmental move. The next headline reads, Holly Cassano case. Accused killer. No deal. Mahomet Mann facing life in prison, if guilty. This article is written by Mary Shank and is based out of Urbana. Accused murdered Michael Henslick. Accused murderer Michael Henslick turned down an offer to plead guilty to the 2009 murder of Holly Cassano for 55 years in prison, the county's chief prosecutor told a judge on Monday. In response to questions from Judge Heidi Ladd at a final pretrial hearing, state's attorney Julia Reitz said the state made two offers to Henslick to resolve his case short of trial, one for 55 years behind bars made in March, and another for 50 years made in November. Both would have to have been served at 100%. The 31-year-old Mahomet Mann, dressed in a blue suit, maroon shirt, and cream-colored tie, told the judge his attorneys had discussed the offers with him and that he declined them. The judge reminded Henslick that the state planned to seek a sentence of natural life behind bars if he's convicted, based on the brutal and heinous nature of the crime, indicative of wanton cruelty. Miss Cassano, 22, was found with multiple stab wounds in her Mahomet mobile home on November 2, 2009. She had also been sexually assaulted. After 9 years without an arrest, Champaign County Sheriff's investigators employed outside experts in the relatively new field of genetic genealogy to assist them. That resulted in the killer's DNA left at the scene in blood being compared with genetic profiles available in databases used in ancestry searches. In the summer of 2018, that method led police to narrow the search to Henslick, who had failed to give a court-ordered sample of his DNA to the Illinois State Police following a 2017 conviction for possession of a controlled substance. The jury is not going to hear about that narrowing process or Henslick's failure to give his DNA sample as a result of pretrial rulings to exclude that information. Reitz gave the judge a witness list that had 19 names, most of them police and crime lab experts. One of Henslick's attorneys, First Assistant Public Defender Lindsay Yonkis, gave the judge no witness names for her case. The trial is expected to take most of the week. It took less than 4 hours Monday to pick a jury, plus four alternates. The next headline reads, Carl Tax Case. Hospitals' 2019 exemption requests still up for review. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. Nearly a week after a judge found the Carle Health System was entitled to charitable property tax exemptions for 2005 to 2011, the Champaign County Board of Review faces a decision about what to do with Carle's property tax exemption request for tax year 2019. In a brief hearing before the board Monday, County Assistant State's Attorney Joel Fletcher said local taxing authorities haven't yet determined whether they will appeal the decision on the prior year's exemptions. He also said the Board of Review would likely decide on Carl's 2019 exemption requests within a few weeks. I think the question for all of us here is, where do we go from here? Carl lawyer Stephen Flom said at the Monday hearing. Given the ruling last week by Judge Randy Rosenbaum on exemptions for Carl in previous years, Now isn't the time for the Board of Review to put Carl Properties back on the tax rolls for 2019, Flom said, or urged, excuse me. Flom also said he views Carl and local taxing districts to be fellow travelers on the long journey they've been on disputing tax exemptions. We don't really see ourselves as adversaries, he said. Fred Grosser, the attorney for Urbana and Cunningham Township, urged the Board of Review to consider the emphasis the Illinois Supreme Court has placed on charity care. By his calculation, Grosser said, what Carl gave in charity care for 2018 was 1.98% of its revenues. Grosser also reminded the board that Rosenbaum didn't find Carl qualified for property tax exemptions in 2004, which was one of the disputed tax years, and that each tax year stands on its own. It's your decision to decide whether they meet the qualifications for exemptions for 2019, pay 2020, he told the board. The board will be deciding on whether Carl continues to qualify for tax exemptions on 81 properties, plus four new exemptions Carl is seeking on two properties at the new Carl at the Fields, the administrative building and outpatient services facility, along with the Carl Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Building, and the Carl Medical Facility at 1701 Curtis Road in Champaign. The next headline reads, Campus Climate Report, Students Speak Out. Among respondents, one in five women have been assaulted. This is an article that's written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Urbana. As the University of Illinois awaits new federal regulations for investigating sexual misconduct, its biennial Campus Climate Report indicates nearly one of five women have been sexually assaulted since joining the university. According to the survey sent to 12,500 students last spring, 18.5% of women who responded reported an experience of completed oral, anal, or vaginal sexual assault. That figure was similar to the results 2 years ago. It's also similar to national averages, U of I Vice Chancellor of Student Affairs, Danita M. B. Young, said. We're just an average university, and most would border around that average, she said. Among men, 4.2% said they'd been sexually assaulted since joining the U of I, the same as 2 years ago. The report was released Monday as the U of I prepares for new federal guidelines that could give more rights to people accused of misconduct. The Obama administration's regulations had instructed schools to use a preponderance of the evidence standard when adjudicating cases, but the Trump administration rescinded that policy and proposed new regulations that would use a higher, clear, and convincing standard, meaning any claim has to be highly probable. U of I officials took issue with the proposed rules, arguing in a letter to the U.S. Department of Education that they could deter victims from reporting or that they could deter, victims from reporting cases of sexual misconduct. The U of I also cited a 2015 Illinois law that requires schools use the preponderance of evidence standard in student cases. That's a delicate balance between federal guidelines and state laws, Young said. We're anxiously waiting. Reporting misconduct. Getting students to report misconduct has been an issue for the U of I, according to its survey. Only 12% of women and 1.6% of men reported their experiences of sexual misconduct to the U of I, and those who did, 73%, were satisfied with the U of I's response, down from 82% 2 years ago. I think we can always strive to work harder in making sure that people feel safe and that they are satisfied with any level of support they have on campus, Young said. We continuously seek to improve that. Young also wishes more people would come forward when they have been victims of sexual misconduct. There's a variety of reasons why people don't. While most don't tell anyone about their experiences, 87% of students who responded to the survey said the U of I would take their report seriously if they did come forward. I feel very secure in knowing that most of our students firmly believe that if they had to file a report, the university would take it seriously. Young said the U of I takes several steps to educate students about sexual misconduct and the campus's resources. "We require sexual assault prevention training," Young said. "We have the first-year campus acquaintance rape education. There's the ICARE bystander intervention training. We try to educate student groups on the resources available to them." Sexist behavior stats. The study also measured how many students experienced any type of sexual assault, ranging from fondling to completed rape by force. Nearly a third of women, 32%, said they had been sexually assaulted while at the U of I, down from 39% 2 years ago. About 13% of men said they'd been sexually assaulted, similar to 2 years ago. In the category of sexist behavior and gender harassment, about 21% of women said they've been treated differently because of their sex, compared with 6% of men. About 15% of women also said they've heard sexist remarks, compared to 6% of men. Of those who experienced gender harassment, 70% said the incidents happened in the classroom, and 61% of those involved professors. While 2,076 students completed at least a portion of the survey, the report cautioned that the respondents may not be representative of the whole campus. For example, 61% of respondents were women, despite making up about 46% of the campus's enrollment. And now let's take a look at our weather forecast for the next week. This is brought to us by Greg Soulier, that's S-O-U-L-J-E, and his column on the weather front. In the days to come, yet another surge of moisture will deliver heavy rain, locally 2 to 5 inches or more, from eastern Texas to the central and southern Appalachians. In areas where rivers are still running high from last week's heavy rain, additional flooding may occur. Significant rain will fall as far north as the Ohio Valley and the Mid-Atlantic. However, unfavorable dryness, along with increasing drought concerns, will continue in northern and central California. During the second half of the week, much colder air will surge southward across the northern plains, Midwest, and Northeast. So today, the temperature is 38 degrees, partly sunny, northwest wind 8 to 16 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly cloudy, low around 25 degrees. Northwest to west winds, 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming southwest to south. Wednesday, the high will be 36, the low will be 22. Cloudy. Some snow develops for noon, rain and mixed snow in the afternoon. Chance of precipitation increasing to 80%. Overnight, becoming windy. Thursday, the high will be 27, the low will be 18. Windy, turning colder. Snow showers in spots for noon. Falling temps in afternoon. Northwest wind 20 miles per hour, diminishing late. Chance of snow is at 40%. Friday, the high is 18, the low will be 0. Very cold on Friday, but sunny. Saturday, it will get back up to 38 degrees, a high of 38 with a low of 13. Windy and not as cold, partly sunny. And now, top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. The kids of the Orange Crush, K-R-U-S-H, aren't the only ones who know how to make a pre-game ruckus. Tonight at the iHotel and Conference Center in Champaign, the Lincoln Room will be bedlam for the University of Illinois Alumni Association's sold-out Senior Illini pre-game party. Guests include former Illini great Deion Thomas, football's Dre Brown and his wife Lindsay, softball coach Tyra Perry, and administrator Kiko Price. Cheerleaders will play to the crowd, too, although the feisty older set doesn't need much encouragement to cut loose. Having Michigan State in town, for an orange out no less, see the ad on C5, we'll look at that, only helps. The main reason, alumni engagement programming coordinator Gail Bickle said, is the team has been doing fantastically well. We'll have pictures in Wednesday's News Gazette and at newsgazette.com. History. Area history. In 1920, The condition of Urbana Police Chief Charles Vandervoort, who has been very low with influenza for the past few days, is slightly improved. He is now able to take a little nourishment, which encourages his family that there is a chance for recovery. There are still 64 cases of flu under quarantine in Champaign. That was from 1920. In 1970, William Milne, M-I-L-N-E, or Milne, I'll say Milne, director of the Urbana Park District for 3 years, has announced his resignation, saying he has no desire to work for a divided board. In 2015, the Illinois Board of Higher Education asked state lawmakers to end years of reduced or flat higher education budgets and approve a slight increase for the year beginning July 1st. It's time to turn the ship around, said Tom Lamont, IBHE Executive Director and former University of Illinois trustee. Considering the state's continued financial problems, the board proposed only a 1% increase in state general funds for higher education, which Lamont called a relatively modest move, quote-unquote. International history. Today's highlight. On February 11, 1979, followers of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini seized power in Iran. Also on this date, in 1861, President-elect Abraham Lincoln bade farewell to his adopted hometown of Springfield, Illinois, as he headed to Washington for his inauguration. In 1945, President Franklin D. Roosevelt, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, and Soviet leader Joseph Stalin signed the Yalta Agreement, in which Stalin agreed to declare war against Imperial Japan following Nazi Germany's capitulation. In 1990, South African black activist Nelson Mandela was freed after 27 years in captivity. In 2008, the Pentagon charged Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and 5 other detainees at Guantanamo Bay with murder and war crimes in connection with the September 11 attacks. And in 2013, with a few words in Latin, Pope Benedict the 16th did what no pope had done in more than half a millennium. He announced his resignation. The next headline reads, Inherited Alzheimer's Disease Study. Experimental drugs fail to slow decline. This is an article written by the Associated Press. 2 experimental drugs failed to prevent or slow mental decline in a study of people who are virtually destined to develop Alzheimer's disease at a relatively young age because they inherited rare gene flaws. The results announced Monday are another disappointment for the approach that scientists have focused on for years, trying to remove a harmful protein that builds up in the brains of people with Alzheimer's, the leading cause of dementia. We actually don't even know yet what the drugs did in terms of removing that protein because those results are still being analyzed, said study leader Dr. Randall Bateman at Washington University in St. Louis. But after 5 years on average, the main goal of the study was not met. People on either of the drugs scored about the same on thinking and memory tests as others given placebo treatments. More than 5 million people in the United States and millions more worldwide have Alzheimer's. Current drugs only temporarily ease symptoms and do not alter the course of the disease. The study tested solanezumab by Eli Lilly and Company and gantenerumab by Swiss drug maker Roche and its U.S. subsidiary Genentech. Both drugs gave disappointing results in some earlier studies, but the doses in this one ranged up to 4 or 5 times higher, and researchers had hoped that would prove more effective. The study was funded by the U.S. National Institute on Aging, the Alzheimer's Association, and some foundations. It involved about 200 people in the United States, Europe, and elsewhere with flaws in 1 of 3 genes. If you get one of these genetic mutations, you're almost guaranteed to get Alzheimer's, typically in your 30s, 40s, or 50s, said Dr. Eric McDade, another study leader at Washington University. People like this account for only about 1% of Alzheimer's cases, but their brain changes and symptoms are similar to those who develop the disease at a later age. That gives a unique chance to test potential treatments. We know everyone will get sick, and we know about what time that is in their lives, Bateman said. Most study participants already had signs of the harmful protein in their brain, even if they were showing no symptoms when the study started. They were given either a gantenerumab shot, that's gantenerumab shot, an IV of solanezumab, or fake versions of these treatments every 4 weeks. The drugs made no difference in a combination score of four memory and thinking tests compared to placebo test treatments. Details will be given at a medical meeting in April. The next headline reads, Parkland College Dental Clinic Saturday. Parkland College's Dental Hygiene Clinic will host a free dental clinic for kids and teens. Give Kids a Smile Day will be held from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday in the Dental Hygiene Clinic, room L148 on the main campus, which is located at 2400 West Bradley Avenue in Champaign. No appointments are necessary. Offered will be free exams, cleanings, fluoride treatments, and educational activities for kids and teens ages 1 through 17. The event is sponsored by the Illini District Dental Society in partnership with the Parkland's Dental Hygiene Program and Promise Healthcare's Smile Healthy Dental Program. And that article was written by Deborah Pressey. Also, around the area, meet the candidates. Rantoul. Democrat candidates in next month's primary will attend a meet and greet set for 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. on February 19th at the Rantoul Public Library. Set to attend, Erica Weaver, running for 15th Congressional District, Cindy Cunningham for the 104th House District, Ramona Sullivan, Ruth Wyman, Troy Lozar, and David Moore for Circuit Court Judge, and Susan McGrath and Robert Burkhalter, Circuit Clerk. Anne Muhammad. Bids are due to open today on summer 2020 projects at Muhammad Seymour High School. Among the items with estimated costs, fieldhouse floor at $572,219, curtains at $175,135, locker rooms at $82,376, and lobby bathrooms at $39,381. Also, industrial arts equipment will be $49,450, and office carpet replacement will come in at $35,357. Today on WDWS 1400 AM, tune in for the morning show with Senator Dick Durbin as he talks politics during his regular spot at 7:40 AM. The news hour will include a conversation with Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin. She visits host Scott Beatty at 4:20 p.m. And sports talk will be from 5 to 6 p.m. this evening. Guests include Mattoon native and U of I product Will Leach. To chime in, you can call 217-356-9397 or you can text the number 217-351-5357. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, February 11th, 2020. I'll be back shortly with part two of the News Gazette. Stay with me.